Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice. Hello and welcome to Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Today's guest is Colin Milner, founder and CEO of the International Council on Active Aging and one of the leading voices shaping how we think about aging and longevity. Colin has spent more than 2 decades challenging outdated ideas about aging and advocating for wellness, purpose, and active living at every stage of life. Through his work with ICAA, he's helped influence industries, communities, and organizations around the country and around the world, in fact, to shift the conversation about aging from decline to possibility. Colin, welcome to Roundtable Talk.
Well, good morning, and I am thrilled to be here. I'm looking forward to the conversation and to sharing a little bit about, what I see happening out there.
Excellent. Well, like I mentioned in the intro, you're the founder of the International Council on Active Aging. Tell us about the ICAA and its mission.
So the ICAA, actually, we're about to celebrate our 25th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. In October, and we launched right after 9/11. And our vision was very simple, and that was to help change the way we age. Now, sounds easy, a lot harder, as you know, because virtually everything that we do impacts the way we age. But back then, it was all about negativity. It was trying to find balance instead of enhancing the imbalance that was out there. And I think that today the world is a lot more balanced in regards to how we look at aging in the older population compared to what it was 25 years ago. But that was our mission, was to change the way we age. And it still is, because unfortunately, many of us are still not aging the way we could if we did something about it.
Sure, sure. And you've spent decades, as you just mentioned, pushing back on the idea that aging equals decline. Why has that narrative been so hard to shake?
That's a great question. And I think the simple answer is time. It's this huge, massive wave that was going in one direction. And to change that takes time. I was sitting in the backseat of a taxi with David Buckner, who was the head of the CDC about 30 years ago. And David said to me, "Colin, it will take you about 30 years to have an impact." Well, I'm in the 25th year, and it's now wellness is everywhere. So I think it's just time. You know, things take time to change. Now, one would argue that Mothers Against Drunk Drivers made a substantial change in a much faster period of time. The thing is, we haven't attached that kind of emotion to the aging process.
Sure. No, that's a great point. It was interesting. We had Bob Kramer on the podcast, a few months back, and he described ageism as really prejudice against your future self. And I thought that was an interesting way to put it, because of the fact that we're all aging, and it's just a fact of life.
And it is, and he's absolutely correct. And, going back to the time, 30 years later, there's a substantial movement now in the direction of healthy aging. So once you get there, it's a great place to be. Getting there is always the tough part. And I think that that's why it's also hard to get there, because a lot of people drop out before they can actually see the rewards of their labor.
Great point. So you founded the ICAA 2 decades ago, or 25 years ago. What does active aging mean today? And how has that definition evolved since you started ICAA?
Well, the definition, I would say, is still the same. It's about being engaged in life, in all areas of life. The difference between back then and today it is more realistic. Back then, as an example, you would have people in wheelchairs. The typical picture of a senior living community were older adults slumped over in wheelchairs drooling. I hate to say that, but it was very visible. Or older adults in general, you would have that, or jumping out of a plane. that wasn't very much in between. So I think what we have learned is that it's about being engaged in life. And if you're engaged in life, the ripple effect begins to happen. You're more socially connected. You're more maybe spiritually connected. You're certainly more physically engaged because you have to get up and get out unless you're only engaged in or over the internet. So I would say the big difference is the implementation as opposed to the definition.
Sure. Pardon me. And how has it changed perhaps with the fact that the boomers are now, you know, squarely in that that category, whereas 25 years or so ago when you were founding ICAA, you know, it was still probably the silent generation that was, you know, really in that, you know, squarely in that older adult population. How has perhaps some of the attitudes and characteristics, I guess, of the boomer changed things?
It's changed it completely. You know, we're loud and proud, generally speaking. You know, there's some generalizations that we can make. You know, my mother, as an example, lives in a community, and she's been trying to get the chef to change her dinner so that she doesn't have all the salt that he puts in it. She won't make a fuss. Me, I would be in the kitchen showing him how to do it. So I think number one is if we think about that, we are driving change as opposed to responding to it. And that change is happening all throughout society, whether it's education, whether it is the built environment, whether it is 5-minute, 15-minute, 30-minute cities, whether it's this whole longevity movement around longevity clinics, cities, towns, economies. You know, we are basically driving change, and we are speaking with our pocketbook. Versus years ago, you know, my parents always hung on to their money. They didn't want to spend a lot. I remember going to get a pair of shoes, and it was always, what's the cheapest shoes that you can get that still look good? You know, today, you know, my wife and I went for a very nice dinner last night, and that would probably have been what, you know, my parents would have spent over a 3-month period taking the kids out for dinner as opposed to, you know, a one-off thing. So I think we have grown up as the baby boomers with different expectations, access to different things versus our parents. And if we're not getting those things, we want to let people know that we're not and that they need to change.
Sure, sure. Now, you use a phrase I was curious about. I think you said 5-minute, 15-minute, 30-minute cities?
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
So there's a movement globally with the older population, you know, moving into or the baby boomers moving into the older population, which one would argue they have been for a long time. However, access, making things more convenient. So as an example, Copenhagen. Copenhagen is a 5-minute city where everything around you that you need is available within 5 minutes of walking, riding, or driving. 15 minutes. In Dubai, they have a 15-minute city that they have just completed. Everything is walkable, rideable, or drivable within 15 minutes. So it's all about easy access. So you literally have little pockets, little towns within a city. Now, some people will argue, well, that's kind of segregating things. I would argue that the cities are already segregated on their own through people wanting that anyway.
Interesting. Thank you kind of explaining that. So what happens when individuals start seeing aging as a phase of growth rather than loss?
Everything changes. Now I look at possibilities instead of limitations. Now I look for partners instead of people that sell me products. Now I look for ways to spread my wings, should we say, as opposed to have them clipped. I don't know if there's any other analogies that I could use. There's so many of them. But the reality is the world opens up to you as opposed to closes off to you. You know, for many years, the definition of, or not the definition, but the way aging has been viewed is a slow closing of the window in regards to your friends, your access, your availability to have products and services that are really catered to you, where when you embrace it, and the population around you embraces it, they drive change, which then gives you opportunity. And your word growth is perfect, because then you have the opportunity to grow because the systems around you are in place to support that growth. I would argue that, you know, generations before us, much of the systems have not been in place, and they still need to do a much better job to be in place to help support that growth.
Interesting. So let's talk a little about longevity versus health span. You know, you've talked about both of those subjects, but there's a lot of talk about extending lifespan. Why do you think health span deserves more attention?
Well, how many people want to live in ill health for the remainder of their life once they've reached, let's say, 75 or 80, which is in essence what happens for many people? You know, the average population or the average older adult today lives to 78.4 years of age. The U.S. is 183rd out of 183 countries in the lifespan, health span gap. So we're last place. We could celebrate that, flip it around and say we're first place. First at being last, but the reality is it's 12.4 years of ill health. So the average person, based on a Pew Research study that came out last year, wants to live to the age of 91. Well, we want to live longer, yes, but if we don't expand or contract the period of time that we are living in ill health from 12.4 years downwards, you know, all we're doing is extending our life and extending the years of ill health. Now, the thing to remember is that, you know, in the 1950s, when lifespan was much less, you know, late 40s, early 50s, the health span gap was only a couple of years. What's happened is that we have actually extended our lifespan, but the health span hasn't kept up. And I would say that's a reflection of society moving to the kind of foods that we eat today, you know, fast foods, ultra processed, basically crap. And that is in an inactive population as opposed to a population that's maybe out there moving around and so forth. So until we shrink that health span, lifespan gap, extending life and longevity is just simply extending poor health.
Interesting.
So it's really important to, you know, close that gap.
Sure. So what are the biggest misconceptions around longevity right now?
That it's inevitable that we will live long. You know, I mean, we think we will, but our lifestyle will help dictate that. Even though there is a new research study that just came out this past week that shows that based on biological aging, that really our genes account for 50% of our longevity in the way we age, as opposed to the previous thinking of between 6 and 33%. So there's a little bit of shifting taking place. People will go, well, it's all about my genes then. It's not. You still have 50% of that that impacts how long and how well you live. So I think, you know, we have this perception that we are guaranteed longevity. No one is guaranteed longevity. We need to earn longevity by living a better quality of life. The other misperception around that is that longevity is all about decline. We can reverse many of the different issues that we experience, or at least manage them better. 69% of the population today are still extremely active and engaged, whether they have a chronic health disease or not. And given that 90% of the population has over 65 has a chronic health disease, it's not like it's something special anymore. I mean, when I was growing up in the fitness club industry, no one wanted to work with older adults because they were a special population. And that special population was defined because you had a chronic disease. Well, you know, today we know you can live a very good life still with chronic disease if you manage things like what you eat, how much you exercise. And yes, you may take a drug or two because some of that is genetics and you need assistance in that. But that doesn't mean your quality of life has to diminish.
Sure. You know, that's interesting. And how you were saying, you know, that, you know, roughly it's estimated that 50% of your genetics leads to longevity. But to your point, you know, that might give you the years, but it doesn't give you the quality of the years, which that's probably as much as anything impacted by your lifestyle and how you approach, you know, diet, exercise, and all of the other things that can really add to that. So when we talk about aging well, it's easy to think it requires big changes or advanced solutions. What's one simple behavior shift that has a big impact on long-term well-being?
Well, I would say put on your shoes and go for a walk. It sounds really simple. You know, when you're growing up, or at least when I was growing up, my parents opened the door, kicked you out to go to school, and you came back and it was 7 o'clock at night and maybe you had dinner and then you would go out and play. But in between, you just had to find a way of doing things. Whether you went for a walk to school, whether it was playing with your kids, you were out of the house. So the first thing I would say is get out of the house and change your mindset. Think about possibilities. What are the things you want to explore? I've interviewed so many different people, and one of the keys that they always tell me is curiosity. Curiosity is the spice of life. My grandmother, who passed away at 112, was always an extremely curious person. So I'd say, you know, get out of the house, put your shoes on, get out of the house and be curious about life. And a lot of other things begin to fall into place.
That's great. You know, and just talking about curiosity, it can be simple things in your neighborhood or even going to museums or ball games or whatever the case may be, but just whatever it is that your passion is what I'm hearing you say.
Exactly. You know, sometimes we stop being curious. You know, when I would come home, she would ask, where have you been? Not, you know, trying to check up on me, but who've you met? Who do you experience? You know, what beautiful women have you met? And I'd go, well, you know, my grandmother was always trying to set me up. But she was curious about my life. She was curious about everything around her. And everyone that I've spoken with, literally, that has been a key element in regards to their success, I believe.
Sure. And, you know, I realize there are lots of studies that talk about just remaining engaged with life. And, you know, certainly it can be socialization or kind of that social connection. All of that can add to our life. But you're right, that just sense of innate curiosity can drive our passions as human beings. So.
Oh, sure it can. I mean, I look at senior living. I think senior living is missing the mark where they should be centers for discovery. If I am moving into a community, I want to rediscover who I am, discover what makes this community tick, discover my neighbors, you know, all of these different things. I may want to rediscover my capabilities. So to me, a center for discovery is a lot more appealing than saying you're moving into a senior living community.
I really like that. That's a great concept. Great thing to aspire to, certainly.
Yes. And we all want to discover things, I would hope.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great point. You know, not everybody might, but, you know, hopefully if they're in that environment where they can, they start engaging with life again. Because the people that I have, you know, talked to, older adults, and whether it's in a focus group or one-on-one conversations that don't, they seem to have resigned themselves to the fact that they're ready to be done with this life. And it's sad. And then, you know, I also hear stories about people who have made a connection or found a new passion, and it just can change and turn around their outlook and then therefore their lifestyle so quickly.
I'll tell you, my parents were very socially isolated before they moved into a senior living community, and their lifestyle completely changed because they became social butterflies again. And that is an understated element of senior living communities, and that is a social connection, especially in a world that we tend to lose much of our connections as we get older.
Well said. So this is a question that every Roundtable Talk guest gets. What are you looking forward to as you age?
The possibilities. I play pickleball, and I was playing against this guy the other day. He had no idea how old he was. We were sitting down talking, and he said, "Oh, you know, I'm about to celebrate my 90th birthday," and I nearly freaked out. I thought he was probably 79, 80 years of age, and he was active. He could get down low for the ball. He was fast, and he's just a regular guy. And I look at that, and I think about the possibilities that that brings with it. I think that for me, getting older is about embracing the possibilities instead of closing them off. And if you can embrace those possibilities, whether it is travel, sport, relationships, connecting with yourself, becoming more physically active, any of those different things, you know, being purposeful. And I say purposeful because a lot of times we recommend to people that they should find purpose, but not everybody has this big, hairy, audacious purpose. So, you know, being purposeful in the things that you enjoy doing day to day, if all those things are in place, I think life can be pretty darn good, even if you have limitations.
Well said. That's great. Now, you've said that aging populations represent one of the biggest opportunities of our time. Why are so many brands still getting it wrong?
One word, ageism. I wish that I didn't have to say that again and again and again. But, you know, unfortunately, most of the people working in marketing are still younger. And my comment is probably reverse ageism in regards to they're not really excited about creating something fun, crazy, radical for a population that in their minds may be more sedentary, more sedate, not very excited, want something more authentic instead of showing me driving a Jeep over the moon as opposed to, you know, a Jeep to pick up the grandkids as an example. So I think ageism gets in the way of many things, and marketing and consumerism is probably at the forefront of that.
That's a great point. And, you know, studies show, you know, that all important 18 to 34 category, 18 to 44 moms, all of these categories that have, and they do have significant spending power, but certainly studies have shown that the older adults over 65, you know, there's an incredible amount of wealth and spending, you know, purchase decisions that are happening in that age group that people, you know, to your point, just aren't probably cognizant of or valuing.
And the question is, why are those markets looked as the ideal market? The reality is, if you are adding another 30 years to your life, wouldn't you want that business? Wouldn't you want all those products and services for that additional 30 years? And given that older adults have 70 to 75% of the disposable income, and that they are a significant consumer of products and services, and that's shifting what they're actually buying. You know, there was a research study not very long ago that showed that older adults are buying more products to help them age well than they are spending on drugs, legal drugs, that is. The reality is that things are changing. Nothing is still the same, yet marketers still think of it as the valued market. I would look at any market as a valued market that has the disposable income to buy my product or service. And when you were talking about 7 out of every $10, by the way, I have 2 kids. One is 33, the other is 27. They're broke. You know, they come to me for their money. You know, "Dad, I want to go on a trip." "Oh, great." You know, I always know when I hear, dad, you know, I know right off the bat what they're coming to me for. But the reality is they're not making enough to do the travel that they would like to do. So they come to me for the money. Grandchildren, if that happens, you know, think about all the money that grandparents are spending on their grandchildren. So I think marketers and product developers need to think a little bit deeper. Now you begin to see that change happening. You begin to see all the makeup and the clothing companies and some of the car companies in the, you know, definitely the cruise lines as they always have. But I think we have a long way to go to get to where we need to get.
Sure. So what separates companies that truly understand older adults from those that are just essentially checking a box?
You just said it. They truly understand older adults. They take the time. They do the research. I speak to a lot of startups over the course of a year. Most of them, I would say, have not spoken with older adults. They haven't done their research. They've created a really cool product. Maybe they had a grandparent that they thought, you know, I'll create something for them. They've created a really cool product, but they haven't done their market research. They haven't become students of the aging process. So they don't know what it's like, the jitterbug phone or diabetic shoes. You know, those are two products right off the bat that just scream, I'm old. And no one wants to scream that they are old, even if they are. So understand the market is really what the issue is.
Great point. So where do you see the biggest gaps between what older adults want and what they're being offered?
Oh, that's a really good question, because I think a lot of it depends in what area. So let's use senior living as an example. I want continuity. I want to move from where I am into a community, not feeling like I'm moving into a place that is going to be a completely different world. I want my world to just transfer, and I'm moving into a different apartment or a different home, but my lifestyle still stays the same. I think the biggest opportunity is, how do you help people maintain autonomous living, maintain an autonomous lifestyle, not restrict that? So that's one area. You know, if you are looking at, you know, education, how does education change? You know, maybe the lessons in school need to be a shorter period of time. Maybe there's more audio instead of just the written word. So I think if we take all different areas, such as cities that we mentioned earlier, you know, 5 and 15 minute cities, that is changing to make things accessible. Think about how an autonomous car will completely change the life of somebody who's lost their keys, or had their keys taken away, I should say. It completely changes their access, as does Uber. So I think just thinking about not just the needs of the older population, but also their aspirations. I can tell you that I've spoken at many, many conferences, and most of the sessions are around the needs and not the aspirations. So the world is our oyster right now, as they say. There's 8 billion people. Every single one of those people, unless they die, will be aging. And the question is, at what stage do we connect with them during that aging process, and how do we make that process easier? As an example, if people haven't planned well, how do we offer products and services to help them plan better financially, for their homes, for their health, all of those things? So it's just simply sitting back and looking at what their needs and their aspirations are. And that is happening in every category. Question is just how rapidly we are assimilating that throughout society at large.
Definitely. And you know, as you were talking, it was reminding me of how we regularly hear from I think the younger adults, as you were referring to earlier, that are marketing to people, just still assuming that older adults can't handle technology or that they're not comfortable with technology. When I say they, you know, just kind of aggregating the group of older adults, but the population that is now in that category, the boomers, and certainly I think even some of the silent generation folks that have lived through the pandemic, that educated, and I think it leapfrogged where we probably thought we would be in terms of not just adoption of technology, but being comfortable with technology. Have you seen that kind of rapidly gaining traction among the older adults?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at AARP's recent survey report, 90% of older adults now own a smartphone. Well, you know, I mean, it wasn't very long ago that that number was 50%. It was only a few years ago. So to your point, COVID is certainly, or the pandemic certainly ramped that up. With my mother, I went in and I showed her how to connect through Skype and Zoom. And ever since then, you know, my goodness, she likes Skyping me in the middle of the night. You know, hey, let's talk. She does all of her banking now over the internet. She never used to do that. She's 88 years of age. And most people say, oh, she would never use technology. She uses it to look at a lot more than just cats.
Sure. No, that's great. Well said. So if we fast forward 20 years, how do you hope aging will look different than it does today?
I think that we are at a time where aging has the opportunity to look significantly different based around our DNA, that we are able to truly personalize the aging process for each individual so that their results are better instead of trying to do, it's like drugs. You know, when they manufacture drugs, not all drugs work in everyone. You know, there's a percentage of just simply doesn't work. Well, if you are having a generalized program, let's say fitness, you are having a generalized program that you think works for everyone, it may not work for you. I mean, I used to hear people come into the gym many, many, many years ago saying, why am I not getting the results that Jane Fonda is getting? Well, you happen to have a completely different makeup, you know, your body type. You know, Jane Fonda also has all of these people helping her with her diet, all of this stuff. So I think the key for how well we age moving forward is going to be personalization. How do we really focus on the individual? Because no two people age at the same age the same way or at the same rate. So not personalizing things, if you think about it, reduces people truly fulfilling their potential. Personalizing it enables them to embrace their potential.
Sure, sure. So you've had a front row seat to decades of change in this space. What trends in wellness or aging excite you the most right now?
Well, I think the trend in aging really is the acceptance. If we back up, remember, we were speaking at the very start about the 30 years of transition. And I always get asked the question, what is the biggest difference between now and 30 years ago? And it's one word, knowledge. Our knowledge of what we are capable of as humans is much further along than what it was 30 years ago. That knowledge is driving technology. That knowledge is driving products and services. That knowledge is driving experience. That knowledge is driving everything. So to me, as we look at, 20 years from now as an example, how that knowledge is going to change what our life experience is yet to be established. But I think it's going to be much more experiential. And that the reality is that one word is going to drive everything. And we have so much new knowledge each and every day. When I first started 40 years ago, research around aging trickled in. Now it's like, you know, you have two or three fire hoses blasting at you with information. You need to now be able to disseminate or differentiate what is reliable, good information and what is garbage. And if you can do that and then create and design your programs, your buildings, your products, your services, your experiences, all of that, the world is going to be very, very different.
Sure, sure. So what concerns you about where we're headed if nothing changes?
Well, I think the what was happening 30 years ago was, will the older adults bankrupt Medicare, Medicaid, will it bankrupt the social security system, all of that? I think if we have an ill population, one that is not able to, in many instances, take care of their basic needs, we would lean towards that way of thinking. On the other hand, if we have a population that is engaged, that is contributing, that is not supporting ageism, fighting against it, that is embracing their potential, I think the opposite is probably much more realistic, where they are still engaged in the workforce, they are still engaged with their families, they are contributing, and life is very different. So I think it's a tale of two cities. The question is, which one do you prefer to live in? And that is all going to be based on three things: your personal choices, your genetics, and whether society offers you the systems to support both of those.
Interesting. No, I can see exactly what you're saying. That makes perfect sense. So how did you get into the field of aging services in the first place? What drew you here? What was your story?
Frustration. As a VP of sales and marketing for a fitness equipment manufacturer, well, two things. Frustration was one. I used to call in senior living communities and I would get run out of the community because people would tell me, well, we would never put fitness equipment in here. It will kill our residents. And, back then, 40 years ago, when research was first coming out showing the true human potential around strength training and exercising and so forth, the reality was the opposite. So I was frustrated that there wasn't enough knowledge to be shared to reduce people's tension around that point. And secondly, is my grandmother. I always thought, why aren't more people living like she is? So those two things kind of brought me to a point where I just was tired of waiting for somebody else to do it. I waited for 5 years for someone to do what I'm doing today, and no one stepped up to the table. So I decided to put all my retirement funds, because ICAA is a for-profit, mission-driven association versus a not-for-profit. I put all my retirement funds into it. And I had, I'd burned the bridge. There was no going back. It was either going to be successful or I was going to be working a much, much longer period of time in my what should be retirement years.
I really admire that sense of entrepreneurship and going for it and seeing a need and wanting to have impact in the world. That's tremendous. So tell us more about ICAA, the initiatives, the priorities, how you go about your work.
So International Council on Active Aging, as I mentioned, is a mission-driven association. We're in 57 different countries. We have 10,000 senior living communities, 95% in the U.S. that are part of the association. And what our goal is to help them help their residents to live better, longer. So we do that in a variety of different ways. We provide, one, the knowledge, whether that's through things like our print publications, webinars, conferences. We also provide guidance, and that's through things like our industry research, white papers, the think tanks that we do with our members and partners. And we also provide tools. We provide the tools that they need to show their return on investment for wellness. As an example, if someone has moved into your community and they engage in wellness in general, based on our research in the past, in independent living, they will stay with you 2.7 years longer. Well, that's a significant financial benefit. Not knowing that has an impact. Knowing that has an impact. So our goal has been to create tools to help people understand where they are and where they should invest. And we do that in the wellness area. And then we have just also moved into the culinary, nutrition, and hospitality area because we believe that that is right at the center of wellness. And we need to look at that area through a wellness lens. And all of that brings us back to, you know, what did we launch the association to do? To change the way we age. And to get there, I believe that wellness is the pathway to longevity and to changing the way we age.
That's great. Well, you know, I really admire your vision, your drive, and the impact you've had on our field overall. So well done.
Well, I appreciate that.
So last question. What have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
Don't listen to the assholes. Pardon the French for anybody who's on this, but there is no other way to say it. There are a lot of people who have a lot of opinions, and I respect those. There are also people who just want to be not very pleasant. And, you know, life's too short for those kind of people. You don't need them around you. You will find people who will take their place if you're looking at sponsors, you're looking at advertisers, you're looking at members. So don't, you know, as my grandmother would say, don't suffer the fools.
That's great. Well, that's a great advice to end on. Colin Milner, founder and CEO of the International Council on Active Aging. Thank you so much for spending this, this 45 minutes or however long it's been with us today. Really appreciate your time and energy.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to the next time.
Absolutely. Anytime, you're always welcome. I'm Derek Dunham, and this is Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Thank you to Dave Schaffner, our producer, and Matt Campbell, our engineer, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time on Roundtable Talk.